Welcome to Friday with Jim. A different format for the show this morning. Show producer Kathleen Morgane speaks with Dan Sears, conservation director for Columbia River Keeper, for the first half of the show, and then we go live in the studio with Jim and Laurie Kaplan of Columbia Pacific Common Sense.
Well, here with me in the studio is Dan Sears, Conservation Director of Columbia River Keeper. Now, there has been a recent development in the ongoing saga of Oregon LNG in Warrenton, and this recent event is on the federal level.
That's correct. There's a couple of recent events on the federal level that are drawing a lot of attention and that are going to set up a very busy month or two here for people in the estuary who are concerned about Oregon LNG. The first one that folks probably have heard about is the issuance of a draft environmental impact statement for Oregon LNG. And that is a significant step because it sort of signals that FERC is barreling ahead with its own review of the Oregon LNG project. We're over 10 years into considering Oregon LNG as a proposal here in the Columbia River estuary and the pipelines associated with it. And so it's taken 10 years for FERC to produce an environmental impact statement. And to be fair, this is an EIS for the export version of Oregon LNG. The project began in 2004 as an LNG import terminal.
And this is the draft EIS.
That's correct. So this is the draft, and what it does is it purports to give an analysis of the environmental impacts of the Oregon LNG project. And to give some overview for folks, Oregon LNG is proposing what would be the largest private development in the estuary in terms of dredging, in terms of its environmental impact and potential destructive and disruptive capability to fishing and fish habitat in the estuary. So it's drawn a lot of concern from throughout the region. Oregon LNG would basically pipe in gas from North American gas reserves, super cool that gas down to negative 260 degrees Fahrenheit, at which point it would become a liquid. And then that natural gas would be liquid natural gas. And they would turn and export that to high-priced overseas markets with the hope of making a lot of money in between. To do that, they would build 86 miles of pipeline between Woodland and Warrenton. But they would also need an additional over 140 miles of pipeline through the state of Washington to deliver that gas down the I-5 corridor to Woodland. And then here in the Warrenton area and the Astoria area, this is where the terminal would be. And Oregon LNG would build a 1.25 billion cubic feet per day export project. To give you a sense for how much natural gas that is, that's about twice what the entire state of Oregon uses in a given day. So we're talking about truly massive quantities of energy that would be liquefied and flowing out. They would dredge over 1.2 million cubic yards of critical salmon habitat right at the mouth of the Skipanon River. And they would cross over 100 streams and wetlands on their way between Woodland and Warrenton through the Coast Range. It also involves cutting through many private properties all over Oregon and Washington. And so there are a lot of potential impacts with a project like that. And what we've seen so far from FERC in this draft has been really giving short shrift to the potential impacts of the Oregon LNG project. To give you an example, FERC said, well, we think that the issues surrounding disruption of fishing can be mitigated, and that LNG tankers may even come in at night to avoid the busy Buoy 10 fishing season. The idea that you would sort of wave a wand and say, well, on its own, Oregon LNG may decide to avoid this very busy fishing season, that allows FERC in its own mind to dismiss that as an impact, this fundamental disruption of the system. We look at that and say, that's absolutely inadequate. That's an analysis that we can't hang our hat on. We can't trust Oregon LNG to do what's right for the community. And we certainly can't trust FERC to assess what the impacts are going to be. To give people a little bit of sense for the history of FERC, they approved the Bradwood LNG project years ago with a very similar shallow analysis of the project. It's hundreds of pages long and yet fails to reach the appropriate conclusions about the impacts. They did the same with Bradwood LNG. And ultimately, the state of Oregon, Columbia River Keeper, Columbia River Treaty Tribes, and the state of Washington challenged that analysis and prevailed in federal court. Bradwood, after that, went bankrupt. Oregon LNG could potentially face a similar fate for a number of reasons. So while we're beginning this discussion with FERC, and they will be holding hearings soon in the Warrenton and Astoria area, this is really the only ally that Oregon LNG has at this point. Other agencies are looking much more skeptically at the Oregon LNG project than FERC.
When you say we can't trust Oregon LNG, Oregon LNG has made some general promises of over 3,000 jobs associated with construction, and then 150 family wage jobs, their words, in operation of the facility. But there are no specifics about what those jobs would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think the economic impact of Oregon LNG is something that, you know, we've been looking at for a long time, and they purport to bring in these jobs you're talking about, these construction jobs. There would be jobs, obviously, in laying all that pipe to go up and over the Coast Range. But from our analysis, you have to look at the jobs that are being lost and the potential disruption to traffic in the area, to people who live in Warrenton and would have this huge disamenity right there at the head of the Skipanon River. And that's a huge downside to the project. Oregon LNG doesn't enjoy even the type of support that Bradwood enjoyed in some sectors of the community. And ultimately, what we see is a huge amount of energy flowing out of the United States, and that is going to result in increased gas prices here, which has led companies like Dow Chemical to question the economic impact of projects like Oregon LNG and Jordan Cove LNG in Coos Bay. We think that this will be hugely negative for the economy of the area, which is dependent on, obviously, fishing, on tourism, on people interacting with and enjoying the beautiful Columbia River estuary. And that's what Oregon LNG really proposes to damage and to threaten with this huge LNG export terminal.
Now, earlier you said that FERC had ignored some of the environmental impacts or minimized them, but the state of Washington prevailed. Do you see this as an ongoing court battle?
Yeah. When it came to Bradwood LNG, FERC did the same thing. It sort of brushed over the impacts, and the state of Oregon and the state of Washington challenged that decision. In this case, FERC may very well decide to issue an approval of Oregon LNG, and then it will be up to the state of Oregon to make its own decision. So there are two tracks there. There's one for the state to kind of shake its fist at the federal government and say, you're not doing this right. The other is for the state to just use its own authority and say no to these projects. The state of Oregon rejected Bradwood LNG under the Clean Water Act. They actually issued a lengthy decision that explained why it would damage salmon habitat and water quality. They could and should do the very same for Oregon LNG, which would dredge much more than Bradwood, 1.2 million cubic yards right there where the Skipanon meets the Columbia River. And then there's the huge pipeline that would run through the Coast Range through very erosive sediment-loaded streams and watersheds. And we're very concerned about the pipeline itself and its impact on not just the environment, but the communities it goes through, places like Vernonia, Oregon, and through Woodland, Washington. When it comes to the states of Oregon and Washington, we'll be calling on them to use their own power and their own authority. And one way they can do that is by deciding right now that the project doesn't meet the requirements of the Coastal Zone Management Act, which brings us back to Clatsop County.
Now, can you halt right there for a minute and explain Coastal Zone Management Act? Because this is a huge
This is a big linchpin for the project. Just as the Columbia River Estuary is a linchpin for salmon, the Coastal Zone Management Act is a linchpin requirement for Oregon LNG to proceed. The Coastal Zone Management Act is what decides the type of development and the management of resources in states' coastal zones. For Oregon's purposes, most of the decision-making is delegated down to the county level. So the application of the Coastal Zone Management Act in Oregon really relies on the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners to decide which projects make sense, which projects meet up with Clatsop County's land use laws. That's where the authority rests. And the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners in this case have already denied the Oregon LNG project. Their denial was upheld by the Land Use Board of Appeals and then the Court of Appeals. So we know that Oregon LNG runs afoul of our local land use laws in Clatsop County. Now, Oregon LNG has indicated they hope to ask someone at the federal level to override not just Clatsop County, but the state of Oregon in the Coastal Zone Management Act decision. But when the rubber meets the road, if the state of Oregon denies Oregon LNG under the Coastal Zone Management Act, honoring what Clatsop County has done, and they're required to do that under their own regulations. Already, Clatsop County has effectively applied the enforceable policies of the state of Oregon. Once they make that decision final and issue that decision against Oregon LNG, that's going to be a clear signal to the investors in Oregon LNG that this is a problem path. This is a project that doesn't have a future. And it's just one of many problems that Oregon LNG faces. One of the things that's really frustrated a lot of people is 10 years into the process, and we spent years in court and in hearings talking about the pipeline that Oregon LNG proposes. Oregon LNG has signaled over and over that they don't intend to respect the decisions and the opinions of people who live and work here in Clatsop County. And that includes the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners. See, the CEO of Oregon LNG, Peter Hansen, has said he hopes for a non-local process that will resolve their coastal zone management permit. And we are calling on the state of Oregon and our senators to ensure that the will of the people in Clatsop County stands and the fair and correct application of the law that we've seen upheld by the Land Use Board of Appeals goes forward. And after 10 years, it's time for the state of Oregon just to say flat out no to Oregon LNG.
Now, this draft EIS, there is a comment period. The deadline is October 6th at this time.
That's correct. And so if people want to submit comments to FERC, they can do so through FERC's website. FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is a 5-member commission that has essentially never seen an LNG terminal they don't like. And so we take the whole process with a grain of salt. That said, they will be holding hearings in this area. And when they do, it's very important to pack those hearings to send a strong message to not just FERC, but the other people who are watching, the state of Oregon, our senators, our state leaders. We need these people to realize that it's not just a matter of FERC's analysis being flawed. It's a matter of the Oregon LNG project itself being flawed. This is a fitting a square peg into a round hole. It absolutely doesn't make sense to do this type of heavy industrial development in an area that's so important for salmon and that's so close to people's homes, schools, businesses. They're plunking a very high hazard facility right in the middle of Warrenton on land that partially didn't exist up until the mid-50s because it was dredge spoils. And the fact that it is dredge spoils in an area where dredge spoils need to go is a whole nother piece of the story that people may have heard about. We have one federal agency in FERC that will be holding these hearings, and they, you know, are obviously friendly towards the Oregon LNG proposal. So we're really encouraging people when those hearings are announced and scheduled to show up and to tell FERC what you think. We have another federal agency, the Army Corps of Engineers, that is asserting an easement over the entire terminal property and saying that this is a place where they plan to put dredge spoils and where they, in fact, in the past, up until 1992, have put dredge spoils. Just a bit ago,
This easement was established in the 1950s?
That's correct, yeah. And used first in the 60s and then used up again all the way until the early 90s. And the Army Corps of Engineers disposed of hundreds of thousands of cubic yards of dredge material on the place where Oregon LNG plans to put this huge LNG export terminal. So Oregon LNG sued the Army Corps. They took them to court and they said, we think this easement isn't valid. We want this easement wiped out and voided. They referred to it as a legal nullity and so asked a court to get rid of it. A federal court threw out Oregon LNG's case saying that any challenge to the easement would have had to have been brought years and years ago and so didn't even really reach the merits of what Oregon LNG was arguing. What that means is that the Corps has a valid legal right to dispose of dredge spoils where Oregon LNG wants to put its LNG terminal. What's mind-numbing about this is that you have one federal agency, the Army Corps, saying this is a place where we dump dredge spoils, and you have another federal agency seemingly ignoring that entire process, saying, well, we think there are some environmental impacts for putting an LNG terminal here, but we're generally in favor of an LNG terminal on the Skipjack Peninsula. Obviously, we think the Corps did the right thing by defending that easement. We think that Oregon LNG really has no path forward if the Corps doesn't either voluntarily give up the easement or reach some other kind of conclusion. It seems really, really difficult to imagine how Oregon LNG is going to clear all of these hurdles, looking at the Army Corps of Engineers saying that they have a property right over the terminal site, looking at the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners, which says you know, we have a 5-0 decision denying the Oregon LNG project, looking at the state of Oregon, which is all the authority it needs to say no to the project and has given no indication that they're going to take the same approach as FERC and rubber stamp Oregon LNG. There are so many pitfalls for this company. It's time for the state of Oregon to send a strong signal that Oregon LNG needs to be stopped now. Well, yeah, and I just want to say one last thing, which is after 10 years, I learn from the people who live here at every hearing. I show up and I am educated by the people who live here and who work here and who have made themselves experts on what makes this river work and what makes it such a special place. And I really encourage people, despite this being a long fight, to find it in themselves, to come out and to share their stories yet again, because I find them powerful. If FERC doesn't listen, your community is listening, and it's making a big difference. 10 years in, not a shovel full of dirt turned, and we will last another 10 if we have to, and we hope it doesn't last that long.
Dan Sears, Conservation Director of Columbia Riverkeeper. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Friday again here at Coast Community Radio. I'm your host, Jim Wilkins, and we're going live now after an interview with Dan Sears from Columbia Riverkeepers. And one of our local experts on the LNG question is with me in the studio, Lori Kaplan. Lori, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Jim, for inviting me.
I usually like to start with a little kind of a biographical sketch. Could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I grew up in Colorado, where the green is much paler and there's much less water than here, and moved to Astoria in 1996, and have worked, like many people in this region, at a number of different jobs and learned something along the way, of course. And I started becoming active a few years after the proposals for LNG were first introduced, mainly because my work schedule didn't allow me to do very much. But since then, it's kind of what Dan was saying at the end. I've learned so much, and I've been so inspired by so many people who recognized from the get-go that both Bradwood Landing and now Oregon LNG are reckless, dangerous, destructive, and have no business being here. So that's where I am now.
Yeah. Well, I've kind of, from a distance, followed the LNG discussion over the years, and it didn't originally start as an import facility, and then suddenly it became an export facility. How did that come about?
Well, we weren't in the back rooms of the LNG companies, but essentially what happened was the market changed commercially and the technology changed. And so the gas that Oregon LNG proposes to export would come either from the tar sands in Canada or fracked gas, which, I mean, they're both really destructive, horrible projects. Nobody in charge with these companies would want to live where they are fracking gas, and nobody would want to live where they are doing tar sands work. And this is similar to what is being proposed for Jordan Cove. Again, the export. So as Dan said, they stand to make so much money. It's kind of incomprehensible money if they can ship overseas, because the global price is much higher than what we currently pay here. Having said that, if that happens, then it's way likely that our own American gas prices would go up because they can charge more. So that's one of the reasons so many people have become motivated to fight against this. There's the whole carbon footprint, the impact on climate change. Natural gas is often talked about as a clean fuel, and that's such a relative term, because now what we're finding is that when you take in the beginning to the end, the tusk to the tail of this whole project, starting with fracking, ending up with shipping it overseas, the footprint is way bigger than anyone had thought, and it's at least as dirty as coal. And the methane itself, they're finding out, methane gas leaks in this whole process of transporting, processing, and then transporting again. That methane leaks way more than anybody had thought, too. So all there's right. that extra layer of pollution. So,
now, I've heard the argument that LNG can be considered kind of a bridge source of energy that allows us to get by using the lifestyle with which we become accustomed until more environmental friendly sources of energy are made available. How do you counter that argument?
Well, you know, it's not an either or. And part of what we've learned in working with all kinds of groups in this region, and also being in touch with national groups concerned with pollution, climate change, public health and safety, the emergency responses we've seen where there are natural gas fires and explosions. We're all learning from that. And what we see is that the bridge fuel concept is kind of an excuse. And what's happened is that the fossil fuel industry has become so dominant, especially in Washington, and often even with lobbyists down in Salem and in Washington, D.C., that it's been a struggle for alternative sources of energy to even get a meaningful economic foothold, a financial foothold, so that they can actually survive and thrive. And that's really unfortunate. President Reagan, I believe it was, took down solar panels that had been put on the White House decades ago. Think what could have been saved, what could have been learned, what could have been generated had those solar panels stayed and people had the opportunity to really study what could happen and watch the industry grow and mature and the technology improve.
Now, you're involved with a group called Columbia Pacific Common Sense. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, sure. At the very beginning, when the LNG projects were first proposed, there were a number of really thoughtful, far-sighted individuals who caught on immediately that this was so outrageous a proposal. And other people have called it stupid and insane, but I'll stick with outrageous today. And they started a group called River Vision, which worked on that issue and on some other environmental issues. And then a few years ago, another group, several of the people involved with River Vision, started a group focused solely on stopping the LNG proposals. And that's what Columbia Pacific Common Sense is. So we have monthly meetings. We have sponsored numerous public events for educating and outreaching to people in Warrenton and Astoria and even throughout Clatsop County. We've had film showings. We've had guest speakers from even the industry to tell us more about pipelines and the hazards of LNG and why these terminals should never be placed in residential areas or really areas where people live at all, you know, and do work. We've sponsored fundraisers. We've had rallies. We've printed up brochures. We have a wonderful map of the gas vapor hazard zone that is a 6-mile diameter ring around the proposed terminal site on the Skipanon River. And that shows where this odorless, invisible gas, should it leak from a tanker or the terminal or the pipeline nearby, would spread in a matter of minutes. And that gas, unfortunately, we learned, can be ignited even by like a spark from a boat or a lit cigarette. So even for the people who aren't in that hazard zone, which includes most of Warrenton and Astoria and Hammond and a good chunk of Astoria. Even if you're beyond that, by the time wooden houses and trees ignite, it's not pretty, you know, and it's very difficult, if not really impossible, to put out a gas fire, as we've been repeatedly told by people in the industry.
I have trouble understanding how the decision was made to site this thing basically in a tidal land in Warrenton. I mean, if you accept that we need natural gas and it makes sense economically to import it, why would you site it in such a hazardous area, not far from the subduction zone earthquake source and horribly unstable soils?
It's such a good question, and I don't know that anybody reasonable has a good answer, except I think they thought they could get away with it. And one of the good things that's happening soon is the city of Warrenton actually is having a hearing on Wednesday, September 2nd, to review the entire application, because the company had to change its application from an import terminal to an export terminal. So that requires a whole new review. And when we talk about applications, we're not talking about like a two-page job application. These applications are dozens and hundreds of pages, and they come with all kinds of documentation. Unfortunately, Oregon LNG has a habit of presenting inaccurate, misleading, and incomplete, if not actually false, information. And so the hearing is the public's opportunity. All the people out there listening can come to this public hearing on Wednesday, September 2nd, 5 p.m. at the Warrenton Community Center, 170 Southwest 3rd, and speak up. As Dan Sears said before, the people here are fabulous experts. What they know and what many have learned on their own about the technical, the fishing, earthquakes, geology, even about how ships are built, how pipelines are made, about emergency response. It is an incredible wealth of resources and people we have here. And all of us working on this want to protect the Columbia River and our region, not just for ourselves, but for everybody who's coming afterwards, and for all the people of this country and the world who know what a unique and fabulous, magical place this is. So there's this huge obligation that we feel, and the hundreds of people involved in this, to protect and preserve.
Well, I understand, and it makes really good sense, Lori. Now, if one of our listeners was interested in joining the group, Columbia Pacific Common Sense, how would one go about doing
that?
Okay,
they can come to our meeting, which the next meeting is Thursday, August 20th, next week.
Do you have a website?
We use the Columbia Riverkeeper website because they can provide way more information much faster than we can. But the meeting is 6 p.m. at the Three Cups Coffee House, which is at 279 West Marine Drive in Astoria. They can also email me at lcaplan2010@gmail.com. This is an effort where it's taking a lot of villages to defeat this company, and we're doing it. We are doing it, and our motto is onward to victory, and we will not be defeated. They thought they could wear us down, and we are becoming stronger and smarter.
Well, Lori Kaplan, I really appreciate you coming in and talking with us. Unfortunately, my engineer, Terry Wilson, is giving me the eagle eye, which means shut up, Wilkins, because Albert Smith is coming up with his always beautiful Friday folk show, so I'd urge you to stick around. And we will be back next week, Terry, with another version of Friday with Jim. Thank you very much.